Hello, neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. The line between horticulture and agriculture is a pretty faint one, and it keeps moving. It isn't just about scale, with ag being big and hort being small, or about the edible possibilities of the plants under cultivation, with hort being only ornamental and ag being purely edible. If that were the case, where would a sunflower fit, or a black currant bush, or a dandelion? On today's show, we continue to muddy that line, but I think if you listen carefully, maybe you'll see that our guest also helps to clarify the roots of the two cultures. There will be an optional quiz at the end for extra credit.
It all comes down to having good soil to start with. After that, then, everything else is sort of gravy. The old adage, life gives you lemons, make lemonade. Here in Newfoundland, life gives you rocks, make rock art. Always had his adage, knowledge is not knowledge unless it's shared.
Chances are good that you've already heard this week's guest on the radio before, on a gardening crosstalk, or possibly you've read one of his books. Maybe, like us, you drive around with one of his plant identification guides in the trunk, just in case you encounter a plant that needs to be keyed out. Take yourself to a Monday morning in early August. We head up Mount Sio Road in St. John's to the Memorial University Botanical Gardens. Some think of the place as a tourist site or just a bit of calm in the midst of an increasingly excited city, but it is much more than that, as our guest explains. We walk down a crunchy gravel path through the gardens to an administrative building, head upstairs. We're in a small but serviceable office, in between the plants and the pleasant sound of trickling water. There's room for three chairs. Join us.
Okay, so my name is Todd Boland. I'm the horticulturist here at De Munn Botanical Garden. And right now we're sitting in my office just outside of the main building of the De Munn Botanical Garden. Yeah, so it's like a little house that's set in the middle of the forest.
And you have some lovely plants here as well.
I got a few little pets that, that follow me around. You know, you can't be a horticulturist and not have at least a few plants around your office.
Can you remember when you first realized that plants would be part of your life?
Oh my gosh, I'd say I was only probably 10 or 11 years old. My folks had always grew vegetables, so I was sort of always surrounded by that. And we had this one great big maple tree in the backyard. Of course, you couldn't grow any veggies under the maple trees, it's too shaded. So I wanted to grow a few flowers, but you can't take my land for the veggies type of thing, right? That was far more precious. So they said, yeah, you can make a little bed underneath the maple tree. So I had to start off like the worst possible conditions. You had tree roots, no soil, no sun, right? Dry as a bone. But I persevered, and you know, even by 11, 12 years old, I had a little garden created underneath the maple tree. And then that slowly sort of spread, and anytime I could find an interesting little plant, I'd get, you know, get little pieces of plants from here and there. And then eventually parents got older and they weren't so interested. Well, not that they weren't so interested in growing veggies, I suppose. We always were, but because we only had a small garden, we couldn't rotate our crops. And any vegetable gardener will know that you really need to be able to rotate your crops to reduce the amount of pests, build up of pests and diseases in your soil. Because we didn't do that, suddenly we had club root. We end up getting potato canker. We end up getting carrot rust fly. We had leaf miners in the spinach and beets. We end up getting botrytis and onions. I mean, that's the last thing in the world, you know. So I was getting down to the point where all we could grow was celery and peas. And the world can only eat so many celeries and peas, right? As a result of that, the allure of growing your own vegetables wasn't quite so hot as it was. So I was slowly, by that time, of course, I was in university. So at that stage, then I was really trying to grab every kind of plant I could. Yeah. At that point, then I was doing university courses with botany. There was no, of course, botany program per se, not a horticultural program at any rate, at the university here. But they did offer, at least 7 or 8 different sort of plant ecology related courses, which unfortunately today mostly are gone. But I was fortunate when I went through that there was at least 4 or 5 botanical professors down there and entomologists. So I ended up getting my undergraduate and my graduate basically in plant ecology. So that's the closest I could get locally here to horticulture. So all the horticulture, I basically took that knowledge and then twisted it into a horticultural side of things, right? So even though my graduate work was working on native orchids and pollination ecology of native orchids and their habitat preferences and whatnot, it was very easy to take that kind of information then and twist it into horticulture, which is essentially same idea, only thing we're dealing now with ornamental plants rather than native plants.
Yeah. So back in the day when you were having all these crop issues or pest issues, and
right.
stuff, was there a show that you could call on CBC and talk to a Todd Boland sort of person?
Back in the day, I don't know if they had a gardening crosstalk. I mean, I'm not meaning to date myself, but we're talking now, better part, like... Yeah. 35, 40 years ago.
The knowledge was basically you had to ask somebody else.
You had to ask somebody else. And, you know, it was interesting because my father was the one who was more interested in growing the veggies because he grew up on an island and you had to grow your own, right? This is in northeast Newfoundland, northeast coast, up near present-day Newtown, New West Valley, or whatever it's called these days. And so he lived on one of these little islands offshore. Not the highest tree on the island, I use the word tree loosely, was probably knee-high, right? Right? So it was a pretty bleak... Yeah. area, but they all grew their own veggies, and they usually grew them in the drain bogs that were on the island. And my grandfather, he worked in a coastal boat, so he actually got access to more interesting vegetables that the locals didn't get access to. Dad grew up, you know, being one of the few people that had beets. You know, locals didn't know what a beet was. You know, everything was turnip, cabbage, and potatoes, yeah. right? Yeah. But he, you know, they had beets, and they could, you know, get their hands on broccoli and cauliflower. It's like, this is really exotic stuff, right? So at that point, Dad had some knowledge, of course, growing up, but didn't know all the nuances. Yeah. And he worked with Newfoundland Power, and there were a number of employees that worked with him that lived in the Goulds. And they were sort of on the side farmers. Back 30, 40 years ago, it seemed like there was a lot more farming in the Goulds than what it is today. And of course, they were growing large numbers of potatoes and large numbers of cabbages and turnips and whatnot. So Dad used to get transplants from them. Of course, that's how we ended up getting clubroot. Right? It was infected stock there. Yeah. And that's how we ended up getting the potato canker. You know, this was back in the day before Agriculture Canada was breeding or trying to breed for more canker-resistant varieties of potatoes and whatnot, right? So at that point, then you're just relying on the local, you know, we had the local blue potatoes, and they were just maggoty with canker, like nobody's business, right? So, yeah, we didn't have breeding. There wasn't much to turn to, you know, other than a few employees, a few other people you knew who were growing a few veggies. There were no, like, the Ross Traverses of the world, right? So it was before he became the everyday person to go to talk to these kind of questions, you know, the guru when it comes to vegetable growing in Newfoundland.
Yeah. Are people better is not a good word, but are they gardening more successfully or whatever?
I think so. Yeah. I think nowadays there's certainly been a huge increase in people growing their own. And all you have to do is, you know, Google search, or not Google search so much, but Facebook. You just put in a hashtag grow your own. You'll get oodles and oodles of hits. And of course, now we have the Newfoundland Farmsteaders group on Facebook. Yeah. So there's a lot of knowledgeable people there. So between using local knowledge, Ross's books that are out, my books are not so much on gardening with veggies, but they're, you know, it's on the, say, the gardening side of things, as far as growing flowers in your garden is concerned. So we're now able to tap into some local knowledge, whether it's professional, whether it's not non-professional, but even the non-professionals seem they know a lot these days. And certainly I can see a huge difference here in the garden in the last few years with the younger generation in particular wanting to grow their own veggies.
One of the things you're involved with here at the garden as well is propagation of local plants. How did that passion begin?
I guess a big thing with botanical gardens, I suppose, perhaps as a group, a lot of botanical gardens like to grow plants that are species as opposed to fancy hybrids. In our situation, we're more of a small, I wouldn't say mom and pop botanical garden. You know, we are a botanical garden plunked down in the middle of the boreal forest. So we just don't have the facilities here, or really, it wouldn't really blend in to have a fancy botanical garden under the local situation that we have here in Newfoundland. The old adage, life gives you lemons, make lemonade. Here in Newfoundland, life gives you rocks, make rock gardens. Right? So we have a lot of rock gardens, and we use a lot of rocks in other gardens as well. You know, we use them for lining out the beds. And even if it's like a cottage garden, we'll sometimes still have a big old boulder plunked down in the middle of that, because that's what Newfoundlanders have to deal with. Yeah. So we were interested in getting the species plants, not the fancy hybrids. These fancy hybrids just won't cut it. They won't blend in nicely. A lot of them don't do that well here under Newfoundland's climate because they've been so highly bred. They're very, very prone to pests and diseases. Big thing here at Botanical Garden, we're really cognizant about pollinators. So we want to have plants that are going to be good for pollinators. A lot of the modern day hybrid plants don't provide nectar or don't provide pollen for the pollinators. So really, they're all looks, but they don't provide anything. But as far as nature is concerned, it's like they're hopeless plants are like a desert, right? If you're growing plants that are actually the wild species, these have been unaltered. They've not been genetically changed. So as a result, more than likely, they are going to be much better suited for the rigors of an unusual climate, perhaps, or certainly will be more useful to local pollinators. So to get access to the species, you got to grow your own seed, right? Or you got to, if you happen to know someone who's got an interesting plant, you propagate it by cuttings or division or whatever the case may be. So for us here at the Botanical Garden, we are really highly relying upon propagating our own plant material here. We have 110 acres. Now, mind you, it's like 6 or 7 acres that are developed as actual formal gardens. But that's still a large area. You had to go out every year and buy new plants. It cost you a fortune. Whereas we can get them from seed. We get seed exchanges from other botanical gardens all over the world. And that way, it's a great opportunity to get unusual plants. But it still requires you have to grow them all yourself from seed. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're successful and sometimes you're not.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a song that I could play underneath this that relates to it?
I don't know if it relates to it. I got a pile of songs because I didn't know what you were looking for. Oh, what? There's one here by Enya, right? Because Enya is very ethereal. So I figured she'd be nice. And I think it was called something in the forest. I figured that's the closest we're going to get to botanical. Yeah. So it's Enya, and it's just called The Memory of Trees.
Memory of Trees.
At least the title sounds like it should be appropriate.
The Memory of Trees by Enya. Today I'm with Todd Boland, research horticulturist at the Munn Botanical Garden in the heart of the pastoral district of St. John's. We talk about pests, potager gardens, and where the old-fashioned rugosa rose came from.
In this very connected world, people say it's wonderful you can travel anywhere in the world very easily, but at the same time, viruses travel as well. Is that the case in the world of plants? Mm-hmm. Are we starting to experience the very same pests that you have elsewhere?
We are certainly getting our fair share. Being an island, in some respects, we are somewhat isolated from a lot of the various diseases and pests that are out there. But being an island as well, we're also under probably higher risk, right? So it's very easy to bring something in. The controls for bringing things into Newfoundland perhaps not as strict as what they should be. Very strict to get things out of Newfoundland.
Why would that be?
Well, because we have golden nematode and we have potato canker. And of course, both of those would be devastating to get into the mainland markets. If that got to PEI must have just closed down shop, right? It'd be the game over for them. So because commercially we're only growing potatoes locally and in very small numbers, it's not as critical. But it certainly would be more critical if these two pests got onto the mainland. But at the same time, we didn't originally have, like, say, fire blight. Newfoundland was free of fire blight, but now we're starting to see it. And how's it turning up? Is either turning up an infected stock that's coming in from the mainland, which is not being carefully looked at, or people are bringing in plants themselves. We're in Toronto, and you can pick up plants from a local nursery, and you can take them to carry on, or put them in your suitcase, and you can bring them to Newfoundland. I'm not saying people are doing it on purpose now, trying to purposely introduce things, but you don't know any difference, right? Yeah. And you don't realize you're going and you're buying this particular little plant, and it looks so innocent, and meanwhile, hidden away in the soil is some little bug that's not found in Newfoundland. You go and put it in your garden, next thing you know, you have an outbreak of something like elm spamworm or viburnum leaf beetle. It's like, where in the heck did that that come from, right? You know, and it's more difficult then for us to get rid of these pests because a lot of times we don't have the natural predators that would feed on these pests. Whereas on the mainland, all these pests have been there for years. The predators are there as well. So they go through cycles. Here they come and they just got a free-for-all. So we are at risk, certainly from a insect point of view and the potential for diseases, say fungal or bacterial. Certainly we're seeing it.
Is there a connection between agricultural research and horticulture, or is it sort of two different worlds?
There is a bit of a separation for the most part. It seemed like you're either a plant breeder that was breeding on the agricultural side, tried to breed for better pest resistance, better, heavier crop production or whatever the case may be, or they are able to grow under more adverse growing conditions and still be able to get a reasonable crop. On the ornamental side of things, they're more interested in flamboyant flowers. However, today we're starting to see a little more of a trend towards native plants and selections of native plants. So not that they're really highly breeding, but they're going out looking at wild populations and selecting from wild populations interesting plants, which is perhaps, again, a little more ecologically sound to do that than trying to cross A, B, and C, and D and come up with something that's completely out of this world. Now what we're starting to see a little bit starting to take place now is this whole idea of edible landscapes. So what we're seeing now is people that are combining both vegetable growing and horticulture and trying to mesh the two together. And I guess the French always have a great terms for all these kind of stuff. So they created years ago what they call a potager garden. We put in a potager garden here at Botanical Gardens now because we think it's a great way to show the public how you can combine growing fruits, vegetables, and flowers all in an aesthetically pleasing scenario. So if you're going out, for instance, and you know you want to plant a shrub on your front lawn, well, traditionally, of course, we go Potentilla or Spirea. Now saying, well, you know, maybe you want to grow a gooseberry or currant. It'll still fulfill the role of being a shrub on your lawn, but you're going to get a few berries out of it. So there are other plants like that as well that you can grow in the landscape. You're growing sunflowers. Well, you can get the pretty sunflower, but then you can harvest your seeds and afterwards. Yeah. It could be different types of herbs. I mean, things like lavender. It looks beautiful, but then you can harvest it as well, and you want to use it as a potpourri or whatever the case may be. Yeah. And so what you're going to start to see now is some of the horticulturists breeding a plant which was traditionally probably just grown for its pretty flowers, and now suddenly, we're not so interested in the flowers, but maybe the foliage can be eaten, or the flower can be eaten in some way, shape, or form. They're trying to breed for an ornamental that has higher productivity, perhaps from an agricultural point of view. So we're starting to see a little bit of overlap now taking place in that regards. We may see a lot more of that taking place in the future, I suspect. Yeah.
If we were to choose other regions of the world to look at the plants that are there, are there some regions that are more attuned to ours?
Well, I think that certainly Scandinavia is a good similar climate to us. The one area that if I had my choice, if I could do it, would be to investigate northern Japan, the Kamchatka, and the Sakhalin peninsulas in Russia, because they're on the same latitude as Newfoundland. They also have a cold ocean current coming down from the Bering Strait. They do get ice in the winter, coastal ice coming down. Their summers are relatively cool, relatively damp. So they have very, very similar growing conditions to here in Newfoundland. And the one plant that we do have in spades in Newfoundland, which comes from that part of the world, is the Rugosa rose. Uh-huh. And the old-fashioned rose you see in all the outports of Newfoundland, and now it's starting to self-seed along the highways. I mean, it's almost becoming an invasive species in some respect, but that originated from that part of the world. So, and it naturally grew on beaches in that part of far eastern Russia and northern Japan. Not surprising, it's doing so well here in Newfoundland. It's the same kind of growing conditions. What else is in that pool of plant material, of native plants in that part of the world, that could have potential as being an ornamental plant that we could be growing here in this part of the world? And there's been very little plant exploration in that part of the world.
What inspired you to start writing books?
I suppose I always had this adage, knowledge is not knowledge unless it's shared. And so that was sort of like a little mantra of mine. You know, sort of like, I guess, like Ross. People were always coming to me and asking me questions. I wasn't so well known as Ross. But it's all fine and dandy going on radio shows and sharing your knowledge there. I just thought that Newfoundland needed something that was Newfoundland based, or at least Atlantic Canada based, right? Because I've gone beyond just Newfoundland, gone into Atlantic Canada, because traditionally, of course, any kind of gardening books were always either Ontario centric or they were from the United States, more than likely from the United States. And again, growing conditions completely different in Ontario or down the US than what Atlantic Canada would be. So we needed someone to put something together for Atlantic Canadian gardeners to give us a little bit of information. Yeah. Of course, my background originally was in native plants. So I started out first with the native plants. But now, I mean, my love really is ornamental things. Yeah. So now I'm finished doing the wildflower thing. I can't go any further with that one. So now I'm moving over now into the ornamentals. Yeah. So starting out with the perennials, myself and a colleague from Nova Scotia are now going to co-write a book on gardening with acid soil. Because Atlantic Canadians, as a group, had to deal with acidic soil conditions. Yeah. And most books will tell you, oh, you know, you got acidic soils, you're going to have the lime it. Because why? Because you're trying to grow lime-loving plants. Why are we working against nature instead of working with nature? So you got this whole group of plants, ericaceous plants, which are, of course, a lot of our native plants fall in that category. They love acid soil. There's a lot of other garden ornamentals that like acidic soil. So let's not work against nature. Let's work with nature. So that's the next little project. Yep. And then, of course, eventually I'm going to do trees and shrubs. Just a general trees and shrubs.
I see.
Right? So, you know, it's never ending. I don't have a life.
This is your life.
This is my life, yeah.
So is there something that young gardeners should know? Like, there's a sort of questions that they ask always, and you say, oh, yeah, they should have known that before they started.
I think the number one thing here in Newfoundland in particular, it's all about the soil. And that's the biggest problem that we have here is we don't have it. We don't have any soil for the most part. If you want to have success, whether it's growing veggies, whether it's growing ornamental flowers, it all comes down to the roots. And if the plants are happy at the root level, they'll be happy at the top level. And so it's you got to spend the time and the energy to create good soil to begin with. So you have to either amend what we have, and that's major amendment because a lot of times it's only gravel, especially a lot of these newer subdivisions. They have nothing. I mean, it's all been scraped away with a little bit of soil is there. They bring in 3 or 4 inches of topsoil, slap it down, stack a bit of sod on it, and that's supposed to be a garden, right? So, you know, I really feel pity for any new gardeners, really. It's not an easy concept. I think the big thing to do, go with raised beds, because you can make the beds, you can fill it in then with the good quality soil. Otherwise, you've got to have a real strong back, or unless you want to get a backhoe in to excavate it out, because a lot of times you're just dealing with bedrock. I mean, I've seen it. I go around town, especially these new subdivisions, and you see the trees and the lawn, and you can see they're struggling. And, you know, we have a rigorous climate at the best of times. Plants have a hard time getting established here. Yeah. You as a plant, you can't grow without soil, unless you're going to go hydroponics, right?
Yeah.
But that's not realistic for outdoor scenarios. Yeah. That's the biggest advice that you can give to any new gardeners. And I think that applies probably to a lot of Atlantic Canada in that respect as well, because a lot of Atlantic Canadians have to deal with rocky soil. It all comes down to having good soil to start with. After that, then it's sort of, everything else is sort of gravy.
Enya with her tune The Memory of Trees, as recommended by Todd Boland. I started this last section of the interview by asking, are the people who garden in this province better gardeners because of the challenges?
Well, you know, I think friends of mine who live in British Columbia, coastal British Columbia, and I hate them, right? So they just stick it in the ground, it grows, right?
Right.
It's like just no challenge whatsoever. And sometimes, you know, I think the older I get, the more that sounds appealing. I think as a, and maybe as a new gardener, you would find that appealing as well. But I find that most gardeners, once they get into it, if they're going to really get into this, they start to look for a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
They like to try something different, or, you know, I was told this doesn't do very well. Let me give it a try and see if I can, you know, if I can prove them wrong or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think here in Newfoundland, because we probably have the most challenges in some respects for trying to grow things. If you're an avid gardener in Newfoundland, you are an avid gardener. I mean, you are obsessed, really, if you get to that point. And, you know, I'm one of those obsessed people. You know, it's not without its issues from a gardening perspective. And I think my biggest gripe is just that the springs are so late. But on the other side of the coin now, our fall seems to be getting longer. You know, so is this climate change? Is this what's happening? Yeah. Everything's being shifted now. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that the fact that we have a lot of challenges here in Newfoundland can make for us to have some really, really good gardeners.
What's your favorite local plant, if you can think of one, or two or three?
Or two or three.
Or a species.
I suppose orchids.
Orchids, yeah.
Only because I did both my undergraduate and my graduate work on orchids.
Yeah.
And so I've always had a soft spot for orchids as a group. So I just find that it's just an interesting group of plants. They're challenging to grow, and I like a challenge. Native orchids, of course, are almost impossible to grow in a garden situation, so you just enjoy them out in the wild. I think it's just because orchids are such a high, considered by many botanists to be most highly evolved group of plants. They have such very specific pollinator interactions. They have an interesting story to tell. They're not just a generalist, you know, like a poppy. Anything can pollinate a poppy, right? No big deal there. But with orchids, it's only one pollinator, or maybe just a very small group of pollinators that can do the job.
This is a Monday morning. What does a person in your position do the rest of the day?
Well, after being not here for the weekend now, I have to go down to the garden and walk through the... Well, I usually do it every day anyway. Yeah. But certainly after the weekend, I find like you're sort of refreshed after the weekend, and you start to see things, right? So I walk through the garden and say, oh, how did I miss that weed? Right? Or I might look at a shrub and say, that shrub really needs to be pruned. Right? So I start making up my list of things that need to be done around the garden during the rest of the week. Right? One of my other hats that I wear at the garden is the garden's archivist.
Yeah.
So if you want to think about the garden as being like a museum, in our case, a museum of living creatures, all these plants are all put into a database, so we know what plant we have, where it's growing to in the garden. So during the winter, when I can't be out in the garden, then I have to sit behind a computer and start entering in all the data. And, you know, any new plants I've grown from seed, where they were planted to, where their origins came from.
Yeah.
We oftentimes, because we are part of a network of botanical gardens all over the world, we get requests. You know, we have a researcher doing research on roses. What roses do you have in your collection? So you go onto the computer, send them the list of what roses you have, then they may come back and say, oh, well, we're specifically working on swamp rose, and we notice that you have that one on your database. Can you send a seed? We're doing genetic work. And we've been getting a lot of that in the last few years. There's a lot of people doing genetic work these days, because I guess they're trying to find out who's related to who. You know, we're seeing in the botanical world now, so many plants are being moved from one family to another family because suddenly, oops, we made a boo-boo. This doesn't belong in the maple family. This now belongs in the such and such family. So we're seeing a lot of other botanical gardens now doing genetic work. And of course, they want the species. Or they're working on the genetics of a particular plant in Europe, but they want to compare it to similar species in North America. So we're getting a lot of requests in recent years for that kind of work.
Great. Thanks very much for taking the time.
Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure.
Time for the quiz. What do you think is the difference between horticulture and agriculture? Do they both involve plant propagation? Are they both concerned with genetics, with pests, diseases? Are the plants in both of them aesthetically pleasing? Maybe the more you think about it, the hazier the line becomes, and that could be a good thing.
Starting to see a little bit is this whole idea of edible landscapes. People that are combining both vegetable growing and horticulture and trying to mesh the two together. Most books will tell you, oh, you know, you got acidic soils, you're going to have the limid. Because why? Because you're trying to grow lime-loving plants. You got this whole group of plants, ericaceous plants, they love acid soil. So let's not work against nature, let's work with nature.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes or for more information, go to www.fittoeatnl.ca. The music for today's show was The Memory of Trees by the Irish musician Enya. The theme music, Cuckold Hen, was done this week by Christian Wigg. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
Newfoundland, because we probably have the most challenges for trying to grow things. If you're an avid gardener in Newfoundland, you are an avid gardener. I mean, yeah. You are obsessed, really.